Welcome to J.P. Morgan Asset Management's Insights Now. My name is Meera Pandit, and I'm a global market strategist here at J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Today, I am delighted to be joined by my colleague, Stephanie Aliaga, my fellow global market strategist here on the Market Insights team. And welcome to part two of our discussion on AI, this time focusing on AI's impact on the public markets. So welcome, Stephanie. I'm very excited to really unpack the AI story here with you today. I know you've done a huge body of research on this over the last couple of years. So let's get right to it. And maybe you can frame the discussion a little bit for us here in terms of thinking about what inning are we in when it comes to AI? And is that even the right way to think about it?
Yeah, let's get to it. Can you believe that it's only been 3.5 years since the launch of ChatGPT?
It's unbelievable.
It's been a wild ride, that's for sure. We've been through so many different phases. We've seen exorbitant returns on the back of this AI wave already. And we're sitting in a market right now that's grown a lot more cautious and anxious around AI. If I could simplify it from innings, I would say there's really like two big acts here that we've seen around AI. And act one was just around, you know, is AI real? Is AI a big deal? And back in 2023, if you believed that AI was not going to be a fad, it was potentially a transformative technology, then the investment direction was very clear. There were just a few companies very well positioned to sell picks and shovels into this sudden increase in demand. And if you held those names, if you held the broad market, you performed very well during those years. You didn't have to debate too much about the competitive frontier, about costs, because demand was so strong and it was still so early. Where we are today is the competitive landscape has broadened out. It's started to mature. New competition is emerging. We had the first real stress test with DeepSeek early last year with some no-name Chinese newcomer coming in and challenging some really closely held beliefs around the AI build-out. It didn't turn out to be the bearish signal that it, you know, initially was feared to be, but I think it really showed investors that, I mean, you know, these moats are not ironclad. And this wave continues to mature and grow and evolve. And with so much money riding on AI in investors' portfolios, because so much of wealth is currently concentrated in a few AI names, but also just in terms of the spend that these companies are putting towards AI, there's a lot on the table. And now the economics are evolving. You know, costs are coming down in some places, they're surging in other places. AI is increasingly zero sum. One company's profit margin is another company's cost of goods sold. And markets are trying to parse through all of that. And I think what 2026 has also shown is this new fear factor around disruption. Like, what happens if things are just moving way too quickly that we can't really price all of that in? The fundamentals behind all of this are still quite robust. You know, in some ways, I think we're kind of like tiger parents these days. And we've had straight A report cards year after year. Like, anything below that feels like a crisis. But I think it also does mean that the investment playbook does have to look quite different going forward than what it once was in Act One.
Certainly. We've shifted from this monolithic enthusiasm to a much more discerning market environment. And there's a lot of anxieties out there. Even last year, you started to see some of that bubble up with, is AI a bubble? Mm. Are we overestimating AI? And now we're very much in this existential fear phase of, actually, maybe we underestimated AI and it's going to displace us all and everything we know. Talk about some of these anxieties. What are the key anxieties and how should we think about them?
What happens if AI works out too well?
Yeah.
You know, it's fears like all over the spectrum, just given the such a wide range of potential outcomes. And I think that's perhaps the most important fear here is like markets hate uncertainty and AI is just giving them a whole different ballgame when it comes to potential outcomes. Now, I think some of the other fears are also around, okay, ROI, just given how much investment has been put and is going towards AI. I think a big question is, who actually wins the greatest rewards out of all of this investment? I think as this technology continues to advance, we're also learning that it's going to need a lot more compute, and that compute is getting increasingly expensive. So just the economic curve, the cost curve here, is something that is continuing to differentiate some of these companies. And then I think the other fear is just that, you know, kind of going back to that initial point, things might be moving too fast. And what was initially pretty isolated to like the hyperscalers and these chip companies is now an economy-wide phenomenon around AI disruption, competitive dynamics really becoming a lot more fluid. And in some ways, you know, I think that's being priced into markets is uncertainty. You know, you should have a second look at the valuations that you're willing to pay when, you know, the futures, you know, become a lot less certain. And then beyond that, I would say, you know, what happens if AI works out too well? I think some of these viral pieces that have, you know, been circulating around have also underscored for markets that it's not just the micro here. You know, if AI is really productivity enhancing, that should boost margins. But what if it's so productivity enhancing, it creates layoffs? And then you run into a really problematic issue because 70% of the economy is run on consumption. So I think part of this uncertainty is like the second order effects from all of this are things that we're just beginning to try to map out.
Sure. You think about many market phenomenon where people start to get worried. It's very market-based. It's very economy-based. This becomes human-based. It becomes much more existential. And if we have fewer workers, we have fewer consumers. So we don't want to get so productive that all of a sudden, you know, people are not able to afford the things that we are so productively producing and putting together. So it's potentially clearly a huge transition, and we don't really know what's going to happen. But if we think about some of these steps along the way, I feel like this year, the theme of the year and the word of the year so far is agentic AI.
Or vibe coding.
Yeah. Yes, I can't decide which one. But how powerful are these capabilities and why now? Because I feel like the idea of agentic has been around for the last couple of years. So what about it now creates that greater level of fear?
Yeah, I'd say about a year ago was the first time that really powerful reasoning models hit the market. DeepSeek was one of those, but we also had some come from the US around that time. And the reason that's important is because it marked a real inflection point in the capabilities of AI. Because now you don't just have a model that is, you know, next token prediction, next word prediction, just giving you the fastest answer. You have models that are breaking down your query into multiple steps. They're running parallel agents to go research some things while it works on other things. They're calling context. They're calling different tools. That ability to break down queries into multiple steps, much like a human might, you know, has really widened the door on what these models can do. And it's partly behind how good they've gotten at coding. Now, coding is like the perfect match for AI in many ways. AI is imperfect. You know, their hallucination rates are still elevated. But if an AI gets something wrong in code, you know, it's a pretty structured process. There are systems of verification there. The code isn't the output. It's the mobile app. It's the website. And you can see clearly whoever's orchestrating it, mm-hmm. what goes wrong. It's also a perfect match for AI because who's building AI? Coders, software engineers. And so part of the reason they trained this machine to be so good at coding is because they had unique insight and expertise around that workflow. So that's partly why we've seen just such an exponential curve when it comes to how well these systems have gotten at coding. A year ago, coding was maybe helping them write 20 to 30% of their code. Today, the best software engineers in the world are not writing a lick of code. And I think the question that this has created for markets is, are we going to start to see this extrapolated to other parts of the economy? And I think there's two things I want to say here. On the one end, what we've achieved so far is undoubtedly going to have transformative impacts once it's adopted, which it's not. I mean, we've talked about processes that we have on our team that are going to be completely changed once all of our analysts can just vibe code. And we don't have those tools yet. Most of the economy doesn't have those tools yet. Once we do have that, a lot of things are going to change and become more efficient. But the other thing is, like, automating the coding workflow doesn't just copy-paste into automating legal advice, financial advice, healthcare diagnostics. Each of those industries have a lot of complexities that AI models are going to struggle with automating. And we're in that process of trying to do that right now, but it's going to take a lot longer. So I think in some ways we can't extrapolate exponential growth on one end to exponential growth across the economy, but it has perhaps opened the eyes for markets that disruption may just be coming quicker than they've expected. And the real onus right now on a company-by-company basis is for them to really take it by the hands.
For sure. And you can see how coding might be a good applicability for AI, but other areas have certain barriers to entry. You know, I think about financials and that being an area that got hard hit in the last couple of weeks if you think about AI displacement fears. But the reality is when you think about a lot of different financial services companies and integrating new technology, huge cyber risks, a lot of privacy concerns, and regulation, massively regulated entities that need to be very careful about how we're thinking about interacting with AI. So there is a broader ecosystem, and I think that what you point out is that the ability to code within AI doesn't capture all the nuances of every sector's specific ecosystems.
Exactly.
And ultimately, when you think about the adopters too, it's going to be hard to really discern at certain point who is accruing some of these benefits. You know, when you have a very concentrated number of innovators that are doing well, of course, these big Mag 7 companies, you can see it in their profits. Yeah. As you get further and further away, you know, you can still see that with some of the infrastructure layer. But then when you move to the adopters, at a certain point, I think from a market perspective, it also becomes harder to say this is the benefit to this specific company about AI. Mm-hmm. We've certainly heard a handful of really good use cases out there in earnings reports. But I think, you know, you take the internet as an example, and it's very hard to say how much our company or a local bakery benefits from the internet. And yet the reality is it's huge benefit. Yeah. So I think from a market perspective, too, it's the winners and the losers here, to some extent, there's an early mover advantage. And at the same time, hard to say because there are also probably winners that don't exist yet.
Exactly.
So it's a very tricky, somewhat chaotic time to think about. And there is a lot of fear out there. Where do you think, thinking about this, anxieties that we've talked about, what is well-founded in terms of fear and what is maybe a little bit overblown?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that AI is going to really change the competitive frontier for a lot of businesses. And if you are a incumbent, if you are a market leader today in whatever industry that you're in right now, and you're taking that incumbency for granted, you are running a very serious risk. I mean, even just thinking about the mega cap tech companies right now, they've reinvented themselves in the last few years. They were e-commerce companies. They were social media ads businesses. And now we broadly classify them as AI companies. They're investing the most in AI. They're shipping AI services. They're pointing to real productivity gains and, you know, AI-enhanced revenue today. Are we going to start seeing that economy-wide? And I think part of the surprise for investors lately is I think there was this expectation that a lot of these incumbents, established players, would be in a really good position to harness AI because they had all the proprietary data. They had been doing this for so long. They had these established customer relationships. And now I think part of the surprise is that disruption isn't coming from within, but coming from outside. It's coming from private markets, from companies that had no business doing anything and, you know, legal advice, but all of a sudden created some neat AI plugin, you know? So I think that's part of the surprise. And then otherwise, I think it's, you know, if you had relied on pretty sticky revenue for years and years into the future, that does come into question with AI. So some of this rethink, I think, is absolutely, you know, warranted, well-founded. I do think the extrapolation to certain demise for established players or industries is a bit, you know, too soon. Absolutely. I think timelines are really important here as well. Like we were saying before, you know, AI may look exponential on some charts. We have a great chart in our AI deck which shows the meter research around the task length that AI models can automate. But the devil's in the details on that chart because most of those tasks are tasks that software engineers, cybersecurity professionals do. They are confined tasks, the kinds you can write in a manual. Most tasks in this economy are not like that. They're a lot more nuanced. They're a lot more complex. So adoption, I'd say it's not exponential. It's linear. It's jagged. Prone to organizational potholes. I think this is the time to look for evidence to find what companies in each of these domains are the ones that are managing those potholes most aptly.
Sure. And to your point, too, who has the vision? When we think about some of these large incumbents, do they have the vision to continue to evolve, to be the next iteration of themselves and to reinvent themselves? Or do they fall behind? And I think over the last couple of years, you have seen different trade-offs in leadership among the different Mag 7 companies, for example, of ones where it felt like they lost their way and then they found their way back. Yeah. And so you do see a lot of this turnover and change. And I think when we look back at 2026, it's going to be one of those years that is defined by by the fundamentals versus the sentiment, particularly around some of these large companies, where the sentiment is anxiety-ridden.
Yeah.
But the fundamentals have not changed. They've, in fact, probably gotten better. But you look at some of these large tech companies, and they continue to grow earnings double digits on a year-over-year basis. Cloud revenues are up 37% on a year-over-year basis. Earnings surprises are also now in line with market averages, but had been double digits. And the bar is very high, so it is hard to surpass these. But ultimately, what you're seeing from these companies is they continue to produce results,
yeah,
and they continue to double down on their efforts because they're seeing demand. And when we think about the trade-offs that the market is making, as you said, so much investment is going in here, and at first that was rewarded. Now it is almost a very simple equation of your stock will be rewarded or punished based on whether your CapEx upside exceeds your revenue upside.
Yeah.
And if it does, a lot of people did get punished. And the challenge with looking at markets that way is when you think about a multi-year transformational technology, it's so hard to reward the markets on a quarterly reporting schedule.
Exactly.
Because that's just not the nature of transition here. It's going to be a J curve where there's going to be more investment and then eventually more payoff. And I think people have also been surprised at how quickly you've already seen monetization and results from this to begin with.
Yeah, which is maybe one of the best things that came from that whole bubble debate, really, at the end of last year, is it prolonged one from ever happening, because now, like, really, markets are very much scrutinizing all of this CapEx, even when it's tied to really robust fundamentals. And so you've seen valuations really have gone sideways, if not down a little bit, for these companies, despite really robust earnings growth.
Looking for industry-leading insights on markets and the economy? Our Guide to the Markets illustrates a comprehensive array of market and economic histories, trends, and statistics through clear charts and graphs. For more information on the guide, visit our website at jpmorgan.com/GTM.
Let's take a pause from the markets, go economy-wide, because I want to pick up on the job displacement piece.
Yep.
How real a threat this is, how widespread we could see this.
So every conversation I have these days talks about the labor side of the equation. And I think, you know, the range of potential outcomes is wide. I think we are absolutely at the precipice of perhaps what might be the biggest transformation of work in generations. I think the kinds of things that AI can assist us with are vast across this economy, and a lot of work is set to change as we diffuse this. But, you know, transformation doesn't have to equal displacement of jobs. And I will say what gives me some ease is when you look at a lot of the empirical research that has been done so far. Like, we don't know everything that we're going to know about AI in a few years, but we know a lot more than we did a few years ago. And when you look at these studies of, like, what happens when you actually give workers these tools, you see some really interesting trends. And I think some of the ones that I've really taken with me are you've widened the kind of work that a lot of people can do. Because now all of a sudden, like, AI upskills your workforce. These models, even though we call them agentic and autonomous, they're actually not that well equipped to just go run on their own and produce a lot of things without you. They need a lot of that orchestration from humans, from workers. And so what you've seen in these studies is that workers expand the kind of things that they can do. I don't know a lick of code. I avoided every Python class that they tried to throw at me. And the stuff that I've built from vibe coding has been really neat. And now all of a sudden, you know, the limits of what I can create and automate are limited by my creativity, the time I could spend with AI, and maybe my willingness to pay for a premium model subscription. And that, like, expansion, an augmentation of workers, I think is really important. Now, what's ultimately going to define whether a worker can lean into that or not, I think, is adaptability. And this is something where I was just at my alma mater a few weeks ago speaking with some students. And they're also asking this question, right? Like, what should I be, like, learning for the future and, like, to help me get a job? And I think some of the most important skills in the future are just adaptability. Mm-hmm. I was like, spend as much time as you can with AI and problem solve. Think about things that aren't working in certain industries, in your university, at home, and just think, how can AI make this better? If you go into the world, to the workforce, with that mindset, you're going to actually be way more helpful for a company then perhaps a 40-year-old industry veteran that has never used AI tools and is really stuck in the way his ways because they've been doing that for so long and it's gotten them that far, you know?
It puts so much less of a premium, actually, on having very detailed technical skills
yeah.
and very much on the reason you went to college, which is critical thinking,
yes.
problem solving, flexibility, being creative, because that is what basically vibe coding is. Here's what I want.
Yeah.
Do it.
Do it.
See,
yeah,
see what
make
comes
it happen.
Out.
Yeah. It's, you know, the implementation is now like at anyone's fingertips.
Right.
In many ways, which is really neat. Now, that's not to completely dismiss the risk here. I do think that there is a risk that, you know, companies lean into this to save on headcount as opposed to supercharge their workforce. I don't think that's the right way to go about it. But sometimes macro conditions make it so businesses have to think that way. And I think we as a society, policymakers, need to start thinking about what does that new world look like. But I'd say as of right now, it's far too early to be saying AI is behind mass joblessness because we don't really have that. Unemployment's at 4.3%. That's full employment. And layoffs have been pretty subdued. Now, there are other reasons why the economy, labor market may not be going as strong as it could be otherwise. But I'd say it's probably not AI yet.
And what we've seen time and time again with technological transformation is it tends to add workers, not subtract them, because
yeah.
the nature of your work might change, the jobs and the specific roles might change, but it typically creates new ones. I mean, even something like social media, which was meant to just be fun for us to interact with, created a legion of influencers. That was a job that
yeah.
didn't exist like 10 years ago.
Oh, exactly.
So you think about AI. I think there's some existential fear that maybe this time is different and that
yeah.
this could actually be the displacement technology. But I think there's also every reason to believe, given what we know now and all that we don't know, that this could just become another really good technological tool that people have and evolving the workforce.
Yeah.
Now, the other piece of evolution is the labor piece, but also when we think about the economy, the productivity piece.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen some really strong productivity numbers in the last couple of years, pretty astounding. And I think what we're trying to parse through, even as a team, is to what extent is that AI? What is maybe pre-AI? So how are you thinking about these productivity
yeah.
trends?
Yeah. The productivity data has been really constructive. I mean, we just got the latest figures, the final figures for 2025, and productivity growth came in at 2.8%. That's nearly triple the decade before the pandemic average of 1%. Now, that period before the pandemic was like notoriously weak for productivity. But the last 2 years have been a very different picture. I do think it's too early to say that's AI. Productivity, especially in the aggregate statistics, really comes at a lag. I think perhaps what we're really seeing are the benefits from a lot of pandemic reorientation, efficiency gains, work from home, job matching, and so forth. But I think we may begin to see productivity show up in the data in a few years. I don't know if it's going to be this year. I mean, look, every transformative technology has taken like 20 to 25 years before it shows up in the data. AI may be fast. I think it will be faster. But even then, we're talking 5-10 years. And so it's early. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not all becoming more productive. I think there are so many ways that we've used AI in our personal lives this week that have made our lives a lot easier, made our lives better, given us some really handy advice. I can't, you know, I like to make the joke, it's been, I don't even think it's a joke, it's been the number one upgrade to my quality of life in the last few years has been my AI sidekick. But how much of that actually shows up into the economic data? Like, almost none of it. So there's all these productivity gains, like what Rob Solow once said, right? The internet age is everywhere except in the productivity data. I think today it's probably more of the same. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't productivity gains. And I think what's really constructive is the firm level evidence of productivity growth, because there is a lot that you can gain if you are nimble, if you are agile in this AI race. And that's probably going to inform where markets separate the winners from the laggards.
Let's talk a little bit more about separating the winners from the losers. I think the productivity debate, the labor force debate are really interesting. And we were even just talking this morning about how productivity is a function of both the business cycle and the technological cycle.
Yeah.
So time will tell how much we can actually parse through for AI, but certainly it's going to be a big component of that. When we think about markets, though, and we bring it back to portfolios, how we are allocating, because this transformation so far has been concentrated, that has resulted in more concentrated markets and therefore portfolios. So when you think about positioning and actually investing in the AI theme, how do you think we should be positioning portfolios? Where are some of the investment opportunities? How is that evolving?
Yeah, I think the risk around disruption is important. And the way to approach that is to mitigate your concentration to any one leader, any one name in this race. So that is a high priority for investors, because if you're just sitting passively in the index right now, you're sitting on just 40% of the top 10 in the index. And as we've talked about, right, the hurdles are pretty high for them to beat. The good news is this AI ecosystem is far more vast and differentiated than it was just a few years ago. And if you want to maybe you want to hedge your bets on who's going to win from all this CapEx, you can maybe invest in where all this CapEx is headed. And the ecosystem is made up of companies, sectors, and industries that come in very different wrappers than concentrated mega cap tech. So we've been talking about this infrastructure layer, but the broadening out of that. So power, utilities, electrical equipment companies, even the chip ecosystem, it's increasingly global and interconnected. As we try to use more and more agents, we're going to need a lot more memory. We're going to need a lot more chips in general. We haven't even started real deployment of AI robotics just yet. So if there's still a lot of value to be made on the infrastructure side. I was talking about chips, but I think the power story is one that is very structural in nature. And these are companies with real assets behind them, sometimes contracted revenues, more defensive characteristics in case we did end up into a, you know, into a recession or a macro slowdown or whatever it may be. So those, I think, are some real opportunities. And then you also, you want to have some shield in your portfolio in case we might have a period of disillusionment when it comes to AI. Every technology has had its peaks and busts. Mm. And I think this whole bubble debate also was very productive for investors and just making sure your portfolio is built to withstand the upside and the downside.
For sure. For sure. And I think, too, there's that global component of it. I mean, one, from a sector and style perspective, we've seen things shift from growth to value. So it's good to have a good balance there. Public to private markets, as you've mentioned, there's a huge amount of disruption coming from the private markets. And I know you and our colleague Aaron have talked about that on this podcast as well. But then it's the global component, as you mentioned, different parts of the supply chain, not necessarily existing within the U.S. I mean, you look at EM performance so far this year, which has been double digits, and all earnings growth.
Yeah.
That's a big Taiwan story. That's
huge.
A big Korea story. So you're seeing, while there's so many rotations going on in AI, you're not necessarily seeing rotation away from some of those big international stories, too.
No, absolutely. And some of the biggest winners from all of this CapEx are increasingly global, and value creation happening outside of public markets. I mean, some of the biggest AI native names these days, they've grown to heights we've never seen before, but they're not public companies yet. They will be.
So let's think about wrapping up, and for investors, just to put a little bow on it, who don't want to miss out on this opportunity but are feeling a little bit nervous, what's your best advice?
I think, one, it's really staying the course. You know, there's going to be, you know, what is it that we always tell people about? Emotions, right? Letting emotions drive your investing really never ends up steering you in the right direction. And I think part of what we've talked about are these different periods of market sentiment, which sometimes is informed by fundamentals, but other times isn't. So I think staying the course, but then also making sure that you're in a sturdy boat. And that kind of goes back to having that diversified portfolio that's built to withstand the upside and the downside. But I know, and I'm curious how you're talking to clients about this too, like there is a lot more caution. And I think investors are asking, like, how do I get out of the AI theme? Like, what can I invest in that's beyond that? Like, do you think that's the right approach? Or how should we really be thinking about investing in Act 3, whatever may come next?
What I was reflecting on earlier is 2026 could be this epic battle between fundamentals and sentiment. And the sentiment is a little bit more challenged right now. But when we think about the fundamentals, again, you have, forget about just AI, but S&P 500 wide, you continue to have double-digit profits. We're potentially on the third year in a row of that. We have extraordinary margins that have grown to record heights. And we do have genuine growth and innovation around some of these themes. So it's not just financial engineering. We're actually transforming our economy and our markets. And when we think about the rally that we've had in the stock market over the last couple of years, it's actually gotten higher quality. Back in 2023, about 27% of the rally came from earnings growth. But last year, it was 84%. So as valuations kind of stay at their high perch but don't move all that much, and in fact have moved down a little bit, you continue to drive returns based on that earnings growth. And that's the most important thing as an investor.
And it's starkly different from the dot-com bubble.
Absolutely, where you're actually – and that's, again, it's economy-wide, because increasingly you're seeing a broadening out in that profit story where it's not just the Mag 7 or just technology. It's the S&P 493 as well, starting to see some of that double-digit earnings growth. And when you think about the cyclical drivers overall of the economy, too, we have a Fed with an easing bias. We have overall accommodative fiscal policy, and maybe you could see some more fiscal accommodation given that it's a midterm year. And we've had a lot of momentum from the economy. So you have this economic case, this cyclical case, this structural case, a secular case. So all of these stars are aligning. And I think what it reminds me of is we spend so much time as investors worried about the downside. What could go wrong? How could AI blow up our lives? How could any market interaction blow up our lives? But the reality is, one of the bigger risks is discounting the upside risk, because that's what prevents us from growing our portfolios longer term and getting the outcomes we're looking for.
Absolutely. Beautiful, powerful message to end us there.
Yes,
thank
that
you
was
so,
so
much.
Fun.
Thank you so much for having
we
me.
We have to do this again. But thank you all for tuning into another episode of JP Morgan Asset Management's Insights Now. For more insights on the impact of artificial intelligence, visit our AI Hub by going to jpmorgan.com/AI Hub. We hope you join us next time.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.